Gather round. The witching hour draws near. I'm your haunted host, animation industry artist, witch, and overall spooky enthusiast, Jenny Calabro. Come with me as we venture into the spooky realm of entertainment and real-life ghosties in this episode of A Jaunty Haunt. Something lurking under the bed, or perhaps in the closet, in the shadowy corner of the room. It's real monsters! Hello and welcome back, jaunty spirits, to a Jaunty Haunt podcast. As I'm sure you can tell from my cheesy opening, this episode is all about real monsters. My guest today is a fellow podcaster named V, who is from the podcast Creative Block. They also are a director and storyboard artist in animation. We get to talk about some really fun episodes of All Real Monsters, as well as our own experiences with our own little creepy crawlies in the dark. I hope you all enjoy this episode. Welcome back, spooks and specters, to yet another episode of A Jaunty Haunt. This time, we're talking about a really fun show I watched all the time as a kid, and that's Real Monsters. But before we get too far into the show, let's meet our guest.
Hey, I'm V. You might know me from Creative Block, which is a podcast I co-host with Jean about animation. And I'm an animation professional. I am a storyboard artist and now episodic director, and I've worked in almost all the companies in LA. My pronouns are, I use any pronouns. Like, usually people are like, kind of like, they'll say like she, her, but I don't mind he, his, or they, them. I identify as non-binary, so yeah.
So as you can tell from the title and from what I said earlier, we're going to be talking about Real Monsters, a wonderful show that came out October 29th, 1994, ran for four seasons until 1997, and was made by Klasky Csupo. So just a quick rundown of the show for anybody who hasn't seen it. And if you haven't seen it and you have Paramount Plus, you can actually go watch it on Paramount Plus. But the show is all about these three specific monsters, Oblina, Crumb, and Ibkiss. And they're three very different monsters. Oblina looks kind of like a black and white Tim Burton candy cane that's upside down with big eyelashes. We have Crumb, who's just a small, stinky, hairy ball of flesh who carries his own eyeballs in his hands. And then we have Ibkiss, who's just this precious, little, tiny, anxious, red, almost like bunny rabbit creature with little elf shoes. And the three of them live in the city dump underground, and they attend a monster academy. And at this monster academy, there is a teacher called the Gromble, who is kind of like a weird centaur creature with like a fingernail sort of nose. It's very, very wild. As you can tell just from these descriptions, the designs are wild. So they attend this academy, and the whole point is that they go out into the world and they scare people. That is what they do. They scare humans, come back to the school, and sit in a very clockwork orange-like creepy chair that reads their memories and their brains and shows the whole class what their scare or lack thereof was for everybody to critique and judge. So it's about them trying to be good monsters and not really being good monsters because they don't really know what they're doing. So with that being said, V, what made you choose this show out of the list of options that I had sent you?
Honestly, Real Monsters was a show that I probably saw it. You know what? I don't think I saw that many episodes of it when I was a kid. I probably saw like, I would say like from 3 to 5 episodes, but it made such a big impression on me to the point that I clearly remember I was probably like, I don't know, 8 or something. And I like took a piece of paper and I was like, favorite cartoon characters. And I wrote Dragon Ball Z. And then I wrote, like, Chip and Dale. And then I wrote, like, Real Monster. So they were part of my favorite, all-time favorite, like, cartoon characters. Even though I had only seen, like, a couple episodes. I don't know. I think it's just, like, honestly, because I just, like, preparing for this episode, I just watched, I would say, half of the episodes of the first season. And I really connected with Ikis, so the anxious bunny-like monster, because he's, like, so anxious, and out of the three monsters, he's the one that always kind of gets things wrong, and there's a lot of episodes that are centered about around him not being scary enough. I don't know, I think as a kid, I was, like, I really wanted him to be my friend. Yeah, I was like, oh, we'll just hang out, and I don't know.
It's funny because, like, rewatching the show for the first time since I was a kid for this podcast, I wrote in my notes in, like, all caps, oh my gosh, now I understand why I loved Ikis so much. It's because he's just this tiny, very cute, anxious ball that's trying to be, you know, big and scary and intimidating and can't really do it and doesn't really know how to do things right. And then, like, when he does get those moments of triumph, he's like, yeah, look at me. And then immediately goes back to, oh no, wait, I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm like, okay, yes, I see myself in this character now.
Well, when I was watching the show as a kid also, I don't think I really understood the stories. I don't think I understood much of the stories. Like, I have this clear memory as a kid watching cartoons and just not understanding anything that's happening. But Real Monsters is really, really cool because it's got, like, so much visual elements to it. And like you said, like, Ikis is most of the time he's just, like, anxious and he's like, I don't know what to do, help me. And then all of a sudden there's, like, something that triggers him and he will grow really, really big. It's actually really kind of cool because, like, when I was watching the episodes again, like, his eyes get red. And you're like, oh, that's actually kind of sort of spooky. And then he gets, like, kind of, like, kind of scary. And I think that transformation, honestly, I think this is, like, a really powerful, I guess, like, analogy or metaphor for, you know, when you, like, for even people, you know, sometimes you see people, like, just kind of, like, flipping, you know, like, from a personality to another. And Ikis is, like, really good at showing, like, how he can be, like, really anxious and all of a sudden he's, like, really angry and scary. Like, but he actually wishes he could be scary all the time. That's, like, the big difference between people and monsters, I guess. It's like, people are usually, like, afraid of becoming scary, but he, like, he wants to be scary, but he can't.
Yes, and this is like, one of my favorite things about, like, spoopy, silly, scary kids shows, especially from the early 90s, is this idea of, like, creepy, scary characters who want to be the, quote, the worst, the ugliest, the spookiest, the nastiest. And I just absolutely love that contradiction. I mean, they do it in, like, the Beetlejuice cartoon, which I talked about with Nicole. Listeners, you can go listen to that Beetlejuice episode. It's wonderful. And they do it in All Real Monsters. And I've always gotten a kick out of those kind of characters who want to be really creepy and really monstrous, but they aren't. They're really fun and enjoyable. Which actually, it's funny because thinking a lot about All Real Monsters for this episode, I was thinking about when I was a kid and just, like, how much I love the show. And I remember specifically, I would go to school and be like, I'm going to talk to other kids about my favorite cartoons. And when I brought this show up, there was a guarantee that there was going to be at least, like, two or three kids that'd be like, oh, I don't like that show. It's too scary. So did you ever have...
Really?
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you ever have a moment where you're like, the show is too scary?
That is so funny. I never felt like the show was scary, honestly, like, as a kid. And honestly, like, watching it now, also, like, I don't really think the show is super scary, but it is really gross. It's super gross.
Yes! Grosser than I remembered.
Yes! Same here. I mean, I did remember an episode. I haven't seen it again, but, like, I did remember an episode where, like, Crumb... I can't remember how that comes about in the story, but basically, Crumb ends up selling his sweat as perfume to the humans.
Yes! Oh my gosh! I just got a flashback.
Yeah. When I was a kid, I was like, okay, that's super gross.
Nasty.
Oh. And he's like running on the treadmill. And like, he's just like, I hate this. I hate this. And everyone's like, no, we got to keep making money. Just like sweat crumb. It's like, it's so funny. Like, this show is like so, I don't know. It's really quirky. It's really, really fun. It's also super gross, but yeah.
Oblina pulled out her insides on multiple occasions. And I was like, whoa, okay, I don't remember this. Because, like, when I was a kid, my parents didn't want me watching, quote, like, gross shows when I was a kid. They didn't let me watch certain things. I mean, it was really limited to, like, Ren and Stimpy, which I'm, like, especially as an adult, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Not my bag. And so watching this, I was just really surprised that my parents let me watch it, because there's that kind of humor that they didn't want me to watch, where there's, like, farts and burps and snot and all these nasty things.
Okay, honestly though, I feel like Ariel Monsters is really good at kind of putting a spin on potty humor, because like the barf or like the poop or like the whatever, like snot or whatever, it's not like the butt of the joke, and it's never really obvious. Like, for example, there's a moment when like the three of them are like crawling up a pipe, and because I don't know, like Crumb is like, I love crawling in the sewers to go to the human world, and like Obluna is like, no, I would rather take the bus, but they're like, yeah, here we go in the sewers anyway. And they climb up this pipe, and then you hear the flush, and Obluna starts freaking out. She's like, this is so gross, this is so gross, let's get out of here. And Crumb's like, no, it's just used water with like extra goodies in it. And I was just,
oh gosh. Yeah.
You don't see it though. Like, the only thing you see is that the water is really dark. So if you only look at the screen, it's not really obvious. But if you really listen to the words, you're like.
And it's funny that you say that, because like watching these episodes, there was a lot of adult humor I just did not catch as a kid. There's a part where in one of the episodes I watched, they get their ultimate scare assignment, and it's kind of like their midterm or their final for the year. And essentially what it is they have to scare an unscarable human. And so they slacked on their project, and they're given this James Bond-esque character called, like, Detective 411. For anybody who doesn't know, 411 is the number for information. No one else seems to remember that but me. Anyways, so they have to go track down this detective and scare him. And they're trying to decide which of the three, Oblina, Crumb, and Ipkiss, are going to go and scare the guy. He's in, like, the other room. And they start doing eeny, meeny, miny, moe, but they start saying, eeny, meeny, slimy guts, grab a monster by the... And then they put their hands on the other character's mouth to stop her from saying, obviously, nuts. And I was just like, oh my gosh! Oh, that's such an adult joke for a kid's show. It caught me off guard. I was not expecting it.
Honestly, that's so funny that you mentioned that, because when I was watching it again, like, even just, like, when you described the machine, when they have to sit in the Clockwork Orange type machine, I was like, dude, this is pretty dark. But, for some reason, though, like, I think the way it was staged, the way it was, like, storyboarded and, like, directed and everything, it's still, like, I mean, it's, like, first of all, it's super 90s, and second of all, they kind of keep a distance from, like, the dark stuff. So it's still kind of, like, I guess, like, modest with the, like, super gross or adult and or, like, dark stuff. There's hints of it, for sure. But I you know what? I was pleasantly surprised when I watched it again, because I was like, I wonder if this holds up. Like, yeah, obviously, I don't think the cartoon could, like, run on TV now, because, like, the pacing's kind of slow, the music has really aged, but there's a lot of, like, really interesting ideas.
Yes, so I actually wanted to point out, like, the animation, I was actually pretty impressed with it, because you have Oblina, who can turn into any shape, anything, she can change colors. And Ipkiss can change size. And like you said, his eyes will turn red. He'll get like big fangs. And it's really cool because they used those to play up animation. Like there was an episode I was watching, and Ipkiss was getting you know, his emotions were like fluctuating, and he was getting angry, or he was getting hype or something, and his size was kind of changing, but on purpose. It wasn't like it was bad, poor animation. It was like, no, they were kind of playing with pushing his sizing. And then another time, Oblina would just randomly like shapeshift into something just for the heck of it. And I'm like, wow, that's really impressive, because here you have a character who's essentially a stick with stripes and is changing shape on screen, and the animation still looks very, very good. And I was really impressed, because, you know, sometimes you watch these old shows or movies with, you know, you go back to it with rose-tinted glasses. And with this, I didn't really feel like there was too much of rose-tinted glasses with how the animation looked.
100%. Honestly, like, I think they had, I don't know what the budget was like. I don't know how much the animators worked on it, but it looks really good. Like, and even the characters can go off model in a very appealing way, you know, within that style. It's funny because I was talking to one of my coworkers, Brad Gake, who has worked on so many shows, and he worked a lot of the studios, and he told me he like did backgrounds for I, Real Monsters. And I was like, are you kidding me right now? Funny thing was that, like, he told me that when I was like, wow, you worked on the show, it's so cool, he was like, well, you know, at the time a lot of people in the industry did not like that graphic style, so it was really hard to find work because a lot of people were like, ah, it's like ugly drawings or whatever, you know. But I thought that was like so interesting, because I, you know, when I was watching that show again, like, I, Real Monsters has a graphic style, not graphic style, like, I don't know, I don't think you say that in English. I'm French, you guys, by the way, so sometimes I say weird stuff. But like the design, like a design, like a, an art style that is so peculiar to this specific studio. And I think, you know what? I think we kind of lost that. I don't know. Yeah, it's a little bit grimy, but we kind of lost that in like recent cartoons. Like recent cartoons, I love how they look. They look so good. But I wish we had a little bit more like grimy, weird looking like IPs, you know, kind of like that, you know.
They have like weird kind of anatomy really pushed. And it's funny because that's actually something I really wanted to dive into, especially because like I'm a character designer. So I'm like, let's talk about the character designs. So like growing up, I was never a huge fan of the classic Ichipo style. That just wasn't like something that personally drew me, but I loved their shows. Like I watched every classic Ichipo show. I watched Wild Thornberries, Rugrats, this, As Told by Ginger, which was like the last one that they did, which was the prettiest show. And the style was like, they made it work so well for a show about like high schoolers. It just really, really lovely, especially the colors. Anyways, what's interesting about A Real Monsters is that the studio heads, Classy and Ichipo, they're a husband and wife duo that created this animation studio together. And the reason why they created A Real Monsters is because their kids were really into monsters. And so they were like, let's make a show about monsters. And they already had kind of a signature look because they had one other show that they had already made. But they were like, what if we took inspiration from this kind of like illustrative Soviet cartoon? And the cartoon is very like stubby and bubbly and like kind of off and lumpy. The lines are, you know, have varying weight, and they have like kind of these random lines in a lot of different places. And when you look at this inspiration, you can see it in All Real Monsters. And the classic Ichipo style for All Real Monsters, I think personally, out of all the shows that they did, as much as I think like As Told by Ginger looks great in this kind of weird style that they have, I feel like it looks the best for A Real Monsters, because it's grimy, it's weird, it's like, you know, that lumpy looking stuff, because they're monsters. You look at any shot of the schoolroom and there are so many weird, unique monsters that just all work so differently. You've got these centaur creatures, you have a one-legged fly with a human head and like a claw foot, who's voiced by Tim Curry apparently, and you have like this giant like kind of slime bucket thing. It's so much fun. It's just all over the place with designs. And then because they have that like very weird lumpy style, even the humans don't look 100% like human. They look very strange still, and I feel like it just adds to that really weird, creepy kind of horror fun element.
I agree. I think, like, honestly, I agree with you that, like, that style from that studio works the best for iReal Monsters because iReal Monsters is all about things being gross. And the style, I love the style so much because it kind of has this, like, illustrative, like you said, and also kind of, like, indie comics. Like, to some extent, you could almost, like, compare it to, like, Robert Crumb, kind of, you know? It's kind of got this kind of, like a curve and lots of, like, ching and kind of, like, lumpy. I think that goes really well. Because, you know, dude, you see even the opening is just so gross. There's, like, bugs skittering all over the place. You see monsters, like, eating the bugs, and it's just, like, dirt. And, like, honestly, I'm not going to go into too much details, but, like, the hair on Crumb, I'm like, this is not, like, head hair. It's hair from other places.
No!
No! It looks like nasty hair. I'm sorry.
Oh, no! I can totally see it. His whole thing. Oh, gross.
It's so nasty. Yeah, honestly, Crumb is, like, the nastiest of all of them. Like, even Obelina, when she, like, pulls her insides out, like, it's still, like, cute-ish. It's still, like, this could be gum or whatever, you know? Like, but Crumb is just so gross. There's, like, no way around it. Because he, like, sweats and smell. And, like, because people keep, like, calling out to his smell, so you kind of, like, smell it because keep talking about it.
Literally killing flowers as he walks by because he's so stinky. And I'm like, ooh.
He got so stinky, his smell melted the paint off a house.
Oh, my gosh. It's those kind of jokes that I do appreciate. That's the kind of, like, gross humor I don't mind. Especially when he's, like, proud of his stank, you know?
He really is. And I think, like, honestly, I kind of, I don't know. I mean, I guess it was super 90s and early 2000s or whatever. But I kind of miss that in media nowadays. Like, for me, iReal Monsters has never been really scary. Like, as a kid, I don't really remember it being very scary. And when I was watching it now, I was like, this is not very scary. Like, there's a couple, like, tropes, you know, like thunder and, like, shadows and a couple things like this here and there. But I think what's, like, as an adult watching it, what's a little bit spookier about the show is just, like, the dark themes that they kind of talk about that completely flew over my head as a kid. Definitely, though, I picked up on how gross it was. And I kind of wish that we had a little bit more media that would... I feel like now we have cartoons that are very, very clean, very pristine, you know?
A little bit of nasty isn't bad. Like, the paint peeling because he's so stinky, that's, like, the right amount. You know?
Yeah. Cartoons are, like, I feel like nowadays cartoons are like you're walking into an Apple store. You know what I'm saying?
One of the things that I have kind of heard is that executives have said they're afraid of scaring kids and they're afraid of, like, pushing them away because of it being too scary. And I feel like that's why a lot of, you know, we don't see these kind of, like, dark cartoons anymore. Like, we don't see any Courage the Cowardly Dog style, iReal Monsters, even Invader Zim. Like, we don't see anything like that nowadays. Grim Adventures even was, like, one of the last ones I can think of. And I think it's because so many big studio executives are, like, so afraid of scaring kids and pushing them away because, oh, it's dark, it's creepy, it's kind of gross. But, like, growing up, those were my favorite shows as a kid. Like, when it had dark, weird, creepy, you know, oh, it's got the Grim Reaper, oh, it's got scary monsters under the bed, oh, aliens, yeah, bring it on, like, please, ghosts, please. But now it's like, man, they're not really there. And anyone I have heard who has tried to pitch those kind of similar ideas to major networks are usually told, oh, it's too scary, it's too intense.
It's coming around, though. It's coming around. I think they're starting to notice, because I think as kids, I mean, and I can speak for myself and even for one of my youngest sisters. I was 12 when she was born, so, like, I was able to kind of, like, look at what kind of animation she really enjoyed. And she would really love watching those Disney movies where there's, like, this spooky moments, like, for example, in Beauty, Sleeping Beauty, you know, when she's walking up the stairs and it's all green, and it's, like, spooky. Like, she really, like, obviously she was scared, but she enjoyed being scared from, like, the comfort of the couch. And that was the same, too. Like, there was a book in a picture book in her shelf that, for some reason, I was obsessed with. It was, like, you know, I would see it kind of, like, poking out of the, like, shelf. And I would, like, kind of, like, grab it and slowly pull it out of the shelf and kind of look at the picture, the front cover picture. And it was, like, a wolf, like, a dog that was, like, snarling. So, you know, like, those, like, when they have all the wrinkles and the teeth and the eyes are kind of squinty. And that was, like, that was so scary to me. That was the scariest thing. So I would just kind of, like, pull it off, like, halfway and be, like, ooh! Scary and, like, just push it back.
Too spooky.
too scary. And then, like, sometimes I would be, like brave enough to pull out the book entirely and look at the cover entirely and be, like, ooh. And then sometimes I would, like, open it and there's, like, you know, it was, like, a Norse mythology book, actually, for some reason. And most of the pictures were fine, but there was a couple more with, like, scary dogs. And, yeah, those were my, like, those were my brave moments. I was like, ooh, scary dog.
It's so precious.
It's so, yeah, it's really funny. But to get back to, like, our real monsters, though, I feel like, Ickes, and you know what, actually? It's funny. Now that I'm, like, telling the story and I'm thinking about Ickes and him being my favorite character, he, like, most of the time, he's a little wimp, and he's like, I can't be scary. But when he's scary, he's the scariest.
He's scary. Oh, yeah.
He's the scariest of the three of them. I think that's why I liked him, because I was like, he's kind of scary.
So, speaking of scary things, since we're talking about monsters, and we were talking about the scary book on your shelf when you were a kid, did you have any monsters that you were afraid of as a kid? Like, oh, the monster in the closet or the monster under the bed. Were you one of those kids?
I had a recurring nightmare it's so funny. Now it's funny, but, like, it was just, like, I had two things I was really scared of. One were the trees in Snow White. The trees in Snow White are so scary.
Yes.
They're the scariest things I have ever seen. I mean, I had ever seen. Now I'm fine. Now I'm scared of the Grudge. But
upgraded.
Upgraded. So the first one with the trees was that there would be, like, the alarm. Like, kind of like alarms. Like, kind of like, you know, like war type alarms kind of like setting off. And then, like, everybody's, like, evacuating the town. Everybody's running away.
Oh, I've had those. I hate those.
Those are, like, so, dude, they're so scary. They're so scary. And, like, everybody runs. And because I'm so small, I don't run fast enough. So everybody's, like, way in front of me. And I'm like, oh, they're coming. So I have to hide. Like, there's no way I'm going to make it out, like, if I run. So, like, I go in the bathroom. I hide behind the sink. And I wait, and then I hear, it's like, it's the gosh dang trees from Snow White. They're, like coming in the bathroom. And then, I don't know, man. And then they, like, open the door of this, like, behind the sink, and I'm like, and then I wake up.
It's funny that you mentioned the Snow White trees, because as a kid, I wasn't one of those kids that had, like, the monster in the closet or under the bed. That was never, like, a thing for me. Some of my listeners know this, but I lived in a house that had ghosts and paranormal activity. So, like, that was more my concern rather than, like, a fake monster in the closet, which I knew wasn't there, compared to, you know, the white misty figure that would open the drawers in the kitchen at night.
Ow, did you see those often? Was it, like, kind of something that...
Yeah, me, my sister, my mom would see, like, stuff in the house, and my dad would completely deny it. But the only, like, quote-unquote, like, monster thing that I ever had as a kid was... So, my family, our house is in Sacramento, which is 8 hours north of Los Angeles, which is where I currently live. And my grandmother, she actually lives here in LA. So when we were really little, we would always come down and visit my grandma in the summers. And so at night, My grandma would keep her door open to let like cool air in, and we'd lay down in front of the TV in the front room and we would just play while my grandma watched her novellas. If you looked out her screen door down the street, at the end of the street on the right corner in the darkest, shadowiest, shadiest spot, there was this dark silhouette of a tree. And in the tree, it looked like it had glowing eyes and an open, gaping, sharp mouth, just like the Snow White trees, just like that, with the, you know, the branches that look like fingers. And it used to scare me so much as a kid. And, you know, as I got older, I didn't think anything of it. Well, when I started going to college, I moved in with my grandma because I wanted to go to school down here in LA. And I moved in, and one of the first nights that I was living with her, I looked down the street reminiscing about this terrifying tree that would scare me, and I realized there was nothing there.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, Grandma, whatever happened to the tree at the end of the street? Whatever happened to that tree? And she's like, Mija, there was never a tree there. And I was like, what do you mean there was never a tree? Excuse me. No, I remember a terrifying Snow White looking tree at the end of this street. And she's like, no, Mija, there's never been. No. And I was just like, what did I see?
This is a creepypasta right here. This is awesome. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I would want to see more in like kids' animation. Because I was too much of a wimp, like too much of a scaredy cat to watch scary movies, but I loved scary stories that people would tell. So, you know, like that's like at the time, you know, when we were kids, like creepypasta, like you couldn't really find them on the internet because the internet didn't exist.
Yeah, you had Goosebumps, you had Scary Stories. That was the creepypasta. So speaking of spooky stories and monsters and all creepy things, you have a ghoulish cryptid man horror comedy comic on Webtoons, Rodney R. Rodney. Could you please talk a little bit more about the inspiration for that and your comic?
So I was just basically doing some freelance. I was coming off a project that was very taxing mentally for a number of reasons. I quit that taxing project, took a little bit of a break, and then I was just trying to, and as I was doing this freelance, which was like a really super cute, kind of super kid friendly, kind of wacky, fun cartoon, I was doodling in the margin of my storyboards, and I was like, I was just kind of like, I don't know, just like mindlessly kind of playing with shapes and like, maybe like these eyes, maybe this whatever. And then for some reason I drew like a little character, like a little, I think I was actually drawing the character from the pilot, and I was like, oh man, that character looks like they're kind of like dead inside. Maybe, you know. And then I kind of like, I copied that drawing into the margin, and I was like, maybe I can like play with this later. I start looking at my doodle in the margin, and I'm like, how can I make this kind of spooky-ish? Because, you know. We're gonna make this more spooky. So I like gotta play around with it and play around with it. And I was like, what would be the thing that would be, I literally asked myself this. I was like, what would be the thing that would be unsettling enough? But I was trying to find that line. Unsettling enough, but also like acceptable enough for me to let it happen. You know, I was trying to find that line. So it's right at the edge of like, this is an acceptable kind of behavior, but if you take it just like 1 millimeter, sorry, I'm European, so my metric system, but like if you take it 1 millimeter more, then it becomes not okay. And so I drew this picture of Rodney. Actually, at first he didn't even have a name. He was just like this spooky type. He's kind of your, you know, he kind of stems from like the trope, kind of like the like dark, kind of like greasy hair, like stringy hair on like very white skin. So that's kind of, I was like, oh, that's, because, you know, honestly, the movies that like scared me the most in my life were like The Grudge, The Ring. Like my inspiration was, oh yeah, what's kind of spooky. Anyway, if you actually kind of start looking up creepypasta online, that's kind of the, I don't know, I could be completely wrong because I'm not a creepypasta expert, but I feel like that's the kind of genre that is like the most popular. Like it's kind of like, ooh, like there's something that's kind of wrong, you know? It's not like super obvious, but something is like kind of wrong and probably out to get you. So I was like doodling Rodney and I was just like, ooh, he kind of like crossed that boundary where it's like almost not safe anymore, but it's like he didn't cross it enough that you could call the cops, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's unsettling.
Yeah, that's kind of where and so that's why like the very first dialogue I wrote for him was just like, "Oh, you're parked in my spot," and then someone answers, "Babe, didn't you lock the front door?" I don't know. I think it's so funny. I don't know. I guess for a lot of people, it could be just like, yeah, just whatever. It's just kind of weird, but like, it's maybe not like spooky. And then after that, I was just like, I don't know. So this is kind of how it works. I draw a character, I draw a couple situations with them, and then I get obsessed with the character, and I'm like, this is all I can think about. Because then I'm like, oh, this is so funny. Like, then I make myself laugh, which is like a very specific taste. And sometimes I'm like, I think I'm cracking up, and I'm like, ah, I'm the funniest person on earth. And like a part of my brain has to chime in and be like, you know, you're probably okay. You're not the funniest person around. You know, like
it's what makes you unique. And honestly, I've never seen anything like your comic, Rodney R. Rodney. I've read through the entire thing, and I remember the first few images and comics you posted of it, and was like so excited when you said it came out on Webtoons. But I just love it because there's like. There is that weird, unsettling aspect, but that there's also like this like really funny like awkwardness to Rodney that like I can somehow relate to, especially because like I was like the weird, creepy goth kid like all my life as a kid, especially because like even when I was younger, some of my listeners may know this, but when I was younger, I used to do tarot readings and cartomancy. Even before I knew what tarot reading was, I was using basic playing cards to like tell other kids' future. And so I was that weird kid in school who had like no real social, I don't know how, I had like social anxiety. So I was always like really awkward and weird, but I was always trying to be kind to everybody as best as I could as, you know, this awkward fumbling goth teen. So there's a part of Rodney that I'm like, I feel that, especially because when I was like in junior high and high school, I had like, I didn't know this until like I was in community college and I bumped into these people that I went to junior high and high school with that would come up to me and tell me, hey, like we went to school together and blah, blah, blah. Also, I was so intimidated of you when I was a kid. You were so scary. And I was like, what? But I'm like so friendly and I just want to make friends. And I still have people to this day tell me, oh yeah, hey, we went to college together, but I was so intimidated. I couldn't talk to you. And I was like, what? Why? And they're like, I don't know. You're just so scary and intimidating. And I'm like, I swear I'm just a cinnamon roll, please. I know I've got resting bitch face and my Scorpio rising is very intimidating, but I promise.
That's so funny. Because the first time I met you, I remember it was at that mixer and I was talking to your husband, and then when you like popped up, you were like so sweet and I was like, yeah, people to talk to. And I was like, yeah, that was really fun. I've always like seen you as like someone that was really fun.
Oh, thank you.
I relate to what you're saying too, because, you know, I mean, why are we drawings? Because we're like socially awkward, so. And, you know, I mean, like, I feel like it's really funny because, like, a lot of people that really love Rodney are very, like, they would be, like, the kids that, like, would hang out at Hot Topic maybe in the early 2000s.
Yes. Call me out.
I mean, dude, hey, I was there. I was so into Hot Topic. I was just like, yeah, this is my jam. I mean, I was just like, I was so emo. I'm still emo, but I don't show it as much. I'm like, I'm super emo.
Emo on the inside.
Exactly. The inside of myself is, yeah, very dark. But the outside is not anymore. Another major, that cannot be understated influence is Angel Densetsu. And I wish more people knew of this manga, because this manga is one of the funniest manga I have ever read. Every single time I read it again, I'm crying. But like, the thing with Angel Densetsu is that it hasn't been translated officially, so you cannot buy it on the shelves. So for people to know about this manga, it's a little bit more of like, it's more, because he's the same mangaka that drew Claymore. So his very first manga was Angel Densetsu, which is a comedy, a horror comedy. And his second manga is Claymore, which is like a dark fantasy. Claymore is very serious. But Angel Densetsu is so funny. And I, like, a part of me sometimes is kind of like worried that people would kind of like call me out and be like, hey, you ripped off Angel Densetsu. The main difference between Rodney and Seichiro Kitano is that Seichiro Kitano is like your typical high school student. It's a high school comedy. He just looks like the biggest bad guy. Like, he looks like, this is so silly, but I mean, you know, manga, whatever. They're like, oh, he looks like he does drugs. You know, spooky. But basically, they're kind of saying like, oh, he's like on edge all the time. Like, don't cross him or he'll kill you. So that's Seichiro Kitano. But like, at heart, he's this very, very, very genuine, very naive and gullible person. He just looks like a vampire and everyone's scared of him. And obviously, my number one favorite comedy, my favorite genre of comedy is quiproquo, I think is how, I don't know how to pronounce it. It's basically when a character comes into a situation that looks like something it's not. And I think that's so funny because the audience is in on it. So you're basically, so like, for example, a character comes in and they're like, oh, something bad better not happen. And they open the door and then there's like, I don't know, like this is super stupid, but like there's ketchup all over the floor and someone holding up a knife and someone on the floor like struggling to get up. And the person that just walked into the door is like, no. And it's like for the audience, they know. They were like, yeah, they were trying to make burgers, but they're both terrible at it. And it just like is a mess. And I don't know, I think it's just so funny. Yeah, so major influence, Angel Densetsu, it's all of the, it's this all the time. Just like this kind of situational comedy. And another kind of type of comedy that is similar is my number one favorite cartoon, Looney Tunes cartoon. It's called, so it's basically Mark Anthony and Pussyfoot. It's this short, Feed the Kitty. It's so funny because basically it starts with this little kitty that is like a stray, and I love cats, so you know, I'm not biased, it's a great cartoon. He's in the street, he's really cute. Mark Anthony is this big bulldog, starts like barking at the cat, and then the cat starts licking the bulldog, and the bulldog is like, oh, I love this cat now because he licked my face. And so he brings him home, but he's not allowed to bring anything home, any toys, anything. And so he gets scolded right away by his, like, human. And so he has to hide the cat. And there's a moment when it looks to the dog as if the cat was blended in cookie batter.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. He's crying. He's
holding up the, like, cat cookie, like, sobbing, bloodshot eyes, just like, my friend.
This is the pinnacle of situational comedy. So that's kind of, those are like, Angel Densetsu and this cartoon are kind of like both of like my big, super, super big influences in terms of what I try to emulate with Rodney. If you kind of read a little bit of like Ranma and a Half, it's kind of like the same type of humor. Because it's the kind of humor that translates really, really well. So with Rodney, it's exactly what I try to do. The hard thing with Rodney is that Rodney, the more I draw him, the more we see of him, he becomes less and less scary. So in order to like kind of up the spooks of the comic, that's where I need to kind of use a lot of like brain power. People start liking your character. And as soon as people start liking your character, they're not scared of him anymore. They're like, ooh, he's hot. And it's like, no, you're not supposed to, you're not supposed to think he's hot. He's supposed to be scary.
Who's saying this? The only person who should be saying this is the character who actually thinks that Rodney's hot from the comic. That's it. Rodney is creepy in all other aspects. I love that you draw Rodney in situations where, like, for example, there's one in the more recent comics, listeners, where Rodney, kind of uninvited, gets into his neighbor's car to go on a little grocery shop trip. And the neighbor tries to turn on the radio, and Rodney slams the dashboard super hard. And the drawing is very intense and very, like, you can feel the energy of it. And Rodney's very intimidating in that moment, and very creepily and darkly says, like, "I prefer silence." But then, like, you see that he's picked up a fly, and then he, like, lets it out the window with a smile, and it's like he wouldn't even hurt a fly. And it's just this amazing contradiction of this, like, high energy, highly, like, tense and very terrifying, very creepy drawings next to this, like, "Haha, bye fly, see you later." And I absolutely love it. It's a beautiful contrast.
I really love doing that. I think, like, if I can make myself laugh, I'm like, I think I'm on the right path. I'm so happy. Like, it's funny because another friend of mine recently told me, like, "Oh, that was, like, my favorite recent strip of yours." And I was like, "Gosh, dang it. Okay, I got this. I still got this." It's tough, though, because you got to find a way. Because, you know, when I drew this strip, a lot of the comments were like, why is Rodney being such a jerk, though? And, like, because, you know, like, a lot of people like him now. So they don't want to see him act this way, but hey, that's who he is. He's just this way. He's just like he's the kind of character who most of the time is really slow and just kind of like, but sometimes he can be really fast. Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's like, it kind of like, you know, like a frog or like a chameleon, you know, like how, like, most of the time they walk slow, but their tongue can go just like, so that's kind of how I imagine him to be. Yeah, that's so funny. I'm so glad that you like that strip. Yeah, I go through a bunch of rewrites to find, like, the ideas. Because sometimes I'm like, what's something weird? What's something that, like, and I try to find ways for him to come into the story in a way that makes sense. Because, I don't know, my biggest pet peeve would be for a character to come in, you know, kind of like sitcom style, where, like, someone just comes in because they know the audience loves.
Slides in through the door, yeah, yeah.
And and you hear like the clapping and like, yeah, and it's like, okay, why is that character here now? You know, like I so with Rodney, I really try to be mindful of that. I try to be mindful of him coming in to a situation that actually requires for him to be there. And the name Rodney, I think I wrote it in the Q&A, but I was just like, at first he was just this like weird character, and I was like, I don't know, he's just this funny weird character. And then I was just like trying to find a name that would be as weird as him. And I used to play, when the new Animal Crossing came out, I played a lot of Animal Crossing. And there was a character in Animal Crossing that nobody liked for some reason. And that character is Rodney, you know? Nobody liked that character. And I was like, why do you guys hate him? He looks just fine. And so that's how I decided on Rodney. And I was like, how can I make Rodney even weirder? And then I was just like, oh, his last name should also be Rodney, because that's kind of weird.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing about your comic and telling us a bit more about your process and your thoughts and creation of this wonderful cryptid human being, Rodney R. Rodney.
It's hard because, you know, like when you start having people who actually like care for him, it's hard not to fall for what the fans want to see. Because I know if I, like, it would just not be interesting anymore. It wouldn't be surprising anymore, and it would get boring really fast. So that's, I mean,
it wouldn't be what you created originally. It would be, you know, pleasing for the fans, but is it pleasing for the creator? And is it, you know, true to what you see this character in this world?
It wouldn't even be, like, so much even about, like, oh, is it really what I want to do? Like, I think what I'm really trying to do, like, I know, like, I really know who Rodney is. Now I know who he is as a person. I have, like, a deep understanding of the person he is, but I cannot tell too much about him to my audience, because if I did, then it would be too obvious, kind of what he's up to, what he does, his life and all that. And, like, kind of, like, he would... Like, he's an unpredictable character, that's part of his, like, personality, but if I explain the way he is unpredictable, because he is unpredictable to the regular, to like a quote unquote normal person, but he has like an internal logic. There is a way for him to act in like patterns that make sense within his character. Yeah, just Rodney, if you guys are like curious, if you're listening to this, just you can check it out on Twitter with the hashtag RodneyRRodney. You can check it out on Webtoon. That's also the name of it. RodneyRRodney. Rodney is RODNEY. It's also on Instagram if you guys are like, I don't have Twitter. You can also just like look up the hashtag. Or my full name is... that's so long. So grab your pencil, everyone. So my full name is Violaine Bria, which is spelled V-I-O-L-A-I-N-E. That's my first name. And my last name is Bria, B-R-I-A-T. This is my handle for every social media. So that's if you want to look me up. I'm also the co-host for Creative Block. My co-host is Jean Goldstein. We talk about the animation industry. If you want to look us up, it's at Creative Block, creative without the vowels. Yeah, I think that's all. I plugged everything.
Well, thank you so much, V, for coming on to the podcast to talk about Real Monsters, Rodney R. Rodney, your wonderful comic, as well as just spooky things in general. This was so much fun.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for having me on. That was really great.
That's it for this thrilling, chilling episode of A Jaunty Haunt. If you would like to submit a ghost story, send an email to ajauntyhauntpodcast@gmail.com for a chance of having it read on the show, or you can follow A Jaunty Haunt on Twitter for the latest updates on the podcast. For all things witchy, follow me on Instagram at Eidolon's Kingdom. That's EIDOLONS_KINGDOM, where you can also find a link in my bio for tarot readings and other witchy services. You can check out my art on Instagram at Eidolon Knight for art and more. That's EIDOLON_NIGHT. Huge thank you to Bree Paulson for creating the theme for Jaunty Haunt. Beware and take care.